Hello, and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I'm your host, Jennifer Edden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
It is Wednesday, February 13th. It is Galentine's Day. Cheers. I had this sort of grand plan of doing like an actual Valentine's episode, and then even though January was 84 years long, February is half over. So
somehow
that wasn't going to happen. So in the interest of getting an episode out this week so that we can keep on our schedule, which we are doing great at.
Yes.
We decided we would do a non-Valentine's, non-Galentine's
episode.
A normal episode where we yell about things that make us furious. And luckily, you know, when the internet provideth,
When does the internet not provide?
Oh my God, it provideth it hard today. But before we get into the meat of Surveygate, which I am calling it, we would like to thank our donors who have donated since the last time we posted. We'd like to thank Caroline, who donated through our Ko-fi. And Caroline says, thank you for your wonderful podcast. I'm learning and laughing so much. So thank you, Caroline.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone who has donated or supported the podcast in any way by reviewing or rating us on iTunes or the platform of your choice. We truly, truly get really excited by anything like that. So yeah, Surveygate. Where do we even start with this?
With the very well-intentioned but poorly executed.
Oh boy.
So beginning.
So basically, so in the wake, I guess it's much later now, so it's not really the wake so much as like people have been thinking about it. Of the Danielle Smith scandal. And in lesser extent, the Mark Gottlieb ongoing situation, an author came up with a survey that clients could fill out anonymously about their, was it just current agents or current and former? Current and former agents that asked a variety of questions about agenting style, editorial style, feedback, responsiveness, and allowed you to rate those agents on a scale from 1 to 5.
And let's be clear, these are all very good, very important questions to ask to an agent and about an agent, but as part of a conversation, not as part of a Yelp review.
Yes. So let's talk about sort of like the impulse behind this, which is that I feel like there is a sense, I feel like you're about to like tip off the,
thank you. I've done that before.
You have been down this road before, and I'm just gonna slide it.
Sure.
Just in case. You know, I can see how, and the author is fairly defensive about this, that there is a sense there is a lot of information that's, like, behind the scenes or that people don't talk about or that's in there is in whisper networks. And there's no real way to, according to this author, to really tell whether or not someone is, like, a quote-unquote good agent.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that, apart from sort of reducing agents to numbers, which is a gigantic problem, is that one of the things that I think we talk about on this podcast all the time, which is there is no one-size-fits-all agent.
Right. Someone who is top seller, very successful, lots of bestsellers, lots of award winners, could still be totally the wrong agent for you.
Yeah.
And someone who you really love working with could be your best friend's worst nightmare of an agent.
Right. And also, things change over time. So an agent starts out great and then maybe isn't great towards the end. Like, none of this is...
Or just your needs change as
an author. So none of this is evidence of nefariousness.
Right.
So I think Beth Phelan was the first person to sort of point out the problems with this methodology. And it sparked a really interesting conversation on Twitter about, you know, this fear that agents, that authors have now, which is somewhat justified.
Yeah.
About, you know, signing with someone who's going to be a bad agent, someone who's going to be nefarious in some way.
Especially since there isn't really any accountability for agents. There's no like governing body. You don't have to get a license. There's the AAR, but plenty of people are not members of the AAR. And the worst thing the AAR can do to you is kick you out of the AAR.
It has no teeth. Yeah.
So
completely toothless, but not like cute toothless from the Dungeons and Dragons movies. It's like actually toothless. Toothless before you discover that its teeth are retractable.
Yes.
You know.
So yeah, it is very important for authors, especially new writers who don't necessarily know very many people in the publishing industry, to be able to access information about what makes a good agent, who is a bad agent, things they should watch out for, because it really so much of it does have to be about protecting yourself, because there's not really anyone who can protect you.
Yeah. Well, theoretically, your agent can is supposed to protect you.
Yes.
But one of the things I want to talk about sort of before we get into, you know, ways you can kind of figure out some of these issues is I want to talk about this specifically with regards to the Danielle Smith, like, issue. Mm-hmm. Because the problem there is that she was very well respected, even by people who were not her clients. Like, people... Yeah.
Everyone thought she was a real agent.
Everyone thought that she was, like, the real deal.
Yeah.
And when it turned out that she had just been straight up fucking lying, there's not really a lot that a survey can do to protect you against someone who is a sociopath.
Yeah.
You know? Or who, yeah. Or who, you know...
Yeah. All of her clients were blindsided by this.
Yes.
Or maybe there were a few who thought that... There were a couple of stories that emerged about people who thought that maybe they were the problem, or maybe... There was something wrong, but it wasn't anything where it was like, this person is habitually lying to me. There was nothing that was clear about that.
Yeah. And unlike the Dan Mallory situation, which is another thing that there is just not enough alcohol in the land to really get into the depths of that. But basically, Dan Mallory, who is A.J. Flynn, who wrote The Woman in the Window, and got just like a just metric fuck ton of money for doing so. Mm-hmm. There was a big article in The New Yorker, I guess it was last week. Galactic age ago, about how he had basically spent his entire professional career lying about a variety of things, including having two PhDs and also all of his family being dead.
Yeah.
And having cancer not once, but like twice.
Yeah.
But those are the kind of lies that any rational person would have been like, but your mom's, like, on your Instagram all the time. Like, I don't think she's dead. Like, she's on Facebook. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's very simple fact-checking you can do for those kind of lies, like calling up Oxford and being like, did you issue this man a PhD? But, like, in an agenting situation where so much of what we do is completely opaque to the author.
Yeah.
There is so much trust that they put in us.
Yeah.
And... it sucks to have that trust violated, but if someone is a truly bad actor, there honestly isn't a ton. I hate to sound fatalistic, but, like, I honestly don't think that there's a ton that you can do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, that's a part of the issue with this industry and the way it works is just, there's just not a lot that, you know, you can't get your license revoked.
Yeah.
Real estate agent sells you a property that actually they were not allowed to list, they get their license taken away.
Yeah.
Probably fined.
Jim Frankel harassed a bunch of people, and now he's a literary agent.
Oh, my God.
Right? Doesn't that make you just want to die? Doesn't that make you want to die? He was a longtime editor at Tor who had a sort of longstanding habit of just harassing women terribly at cons. And
or physically harassing them.
Oh, yeah. I intended that harassment to cover the entire gamut
the whole spectrum of gross behavior.
Grossness. So while well-intentioned, I think that the idea behind this survey is actually not really all that helpful in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk a little bit about sort of the specific feedback that Beth and some other people pointed out on the internet, which is that there are a ton of ways to take advantage of a survey.
Oh, my
like
God.
This.
Especially an anonymous one.
I was just like, how do you tell that the person's like giving you feedback is the person who is an actual client?
Yeah.
How can you tell if they're not just like a troll from the internet? How can you tell that they're not someone who got rejected and is mad about it?
Yeah.
You know, there is a huge problem with people harassing agents of color and women of color in publishing. Like, how can you prevent this being weaponized against them?
Yeah.
And the person who put together the survey was like, it's really positive so far. It's like a love fest. And I'm like, it's a love fest for like 2 seconds. And
yeah.
Then it's specifically children's
like everything
based.
On the
like,
internet.
Like, it's specifically aimed at like YA Twitter. It's going to get real ugly real fast. Have we not remembered the last 3 weeks? Do you not remember? Have you not been through the wars like I have? So since I've been talking for a little bit, maybe now is a good time to talk about some of the other resources that already exist.
Yeah.
That do some of this work.
Yeah. So
for one.
Yeah.
That are all free as far as I understand.
Yeah. That's Publisher's Marketplace that just shows you sales. But you know, that can tell you enough about this person is
Danielle Smith had sales.
It's true.
But apparently a lot of those deals have been, like, arranged by the authors beforehand, and she just negotiated them. But let's talk about some of the free ones that are user-generated. And
Query Tracker is a big one. That's not necessarily comments from people who are actual clients or former clients, but it is certainly a service that can tell you, like, this person responded. This person took forever to respond. This is why I don't read my Query Tracker comments. I know exactly how bad my timeline is.
Yeah, it's like shame. It's shameful.
And then there's Absolute Write, which is a forum specifically for writers to talk about various things. And so there are a lot of threads in there about agents and editors and publishing, and you can learn a lot about who are the bad actors among agents. You can talk to other people who have agents that you've gotten an offer from. And this is another thing, is when you get an offer from an agent, you can ask to talk to some of their clients. And you can reach out to those clients independent of who the agent connects you to. I've actually had clients email me to say, I got this weird email from someone who says she got an offer from you and is asking me all of these questions. So I just wanted to make sure that was real. And I was like, yes, in fact, that is real.
Yeah.
So thanks for talking to them.
And oftentimes I will specifically, like, check with, like, certain clients to make sure that, because I know that they're writing the same genre or, like, you know, but, you know, it's a free country/world. And for the most part, you are able to reach out to whoever you would like. And also, you're able to ask the offering agent, like, can you connect me with X, Y, and Z? Mm-hmm. I would love to ask them questions about their experience. That's totally legit as far as I'm concerned.
I try to distribute it. When I'm choosing a reference for me, I usually try to pick someone who's in sort of the same genre or age group or whatever.
Right.
And also I try to distribute the load so it's not the same person getting it every time.
Well, for a while, bless her heart, Marika was my only, like, YA person, because she was my only YA person. So I'd be like, hey, here you go. Talk to my YA person. But yeah, you can go to Absolute Right. You can go to Query Tracker. You can talk to their current clients. You can also talk to their former clients. Like, most of the time that information is fairly easily accessible, especially if you, you know, if one of us sold a book for someone and then that person and I parted ways, like, that information is going to be on Publishers Marketplace. You know, you can absolutely reach out to them too. But I think that this is a good way to kind of transition into sort of, like, the failures of the way that we currently talk about getting that information and, like, ways author can, because we kind of addressed this part, what they were trying to do. We kind of talked about that earlier. We made an outline for the first time ever in the history of this podcast, because we were like, there is a lot of ground to cover here.
And we were having the whole conversation before we started recording. We were like, we better write all this down so we don't forget it, because we already said it.
Well, also, like, I mean, this is sort of like an aside, but, like, the whole thing moved so quickly today that, like,
it started and then it finished.
It started and then it finished, and I hope it's done now. I hope that this doesn't spark anything else. But
I think it did go up last night because I was seeing tweets that
there were like 170 responses. I was like,
but I was seeing tweets from other agents who were not like, specifying what they were talking about, but were leaning or talking about the fact that agents take on a lot of work for free, at a risk to ourselves on faith.
Yeah.
And so we are, and a lot of what we do is invisible to the authors.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to, it's like, it's just, it's not really necessarily quantifiable, guys.
Well, and, like, you know, one of the things, you know, before we sort of get back into the sort of, like, actual helpful part of this podcast, like, one of the things that Beth pointed out is that, like, it really makes us feel like shit.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's no way to quantify what we do.
Yeah.
Like, there's the money quantification.
Yes.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
But, like, there's so much that goes along with that. Like, did I sell that book to the right person?
Mm-hmm.
Did I sell that book for the right amount of money? Did I sell it with the right rights package? Did I sell it with the right, you know, royalties? Like, there's like, even with that, there's so much that goes into it that, like...
Does it have joint accounting?
Pardon me as I become Godzilla and destroy Tokyo. Like, I hate it so much. Joint accounting is bad.
Yeah.
Unless the amount of money involved is so large that you're never going to earn out any of those advances anyway. Like,
in which case, whatever.
Like, fine, whatever. But
yeah, so there's like, a lot that
screaming
goes into
for fucking ever. It's all I have to say about that. But yeah, I mean.
And it's also, the other thing is, this is on a scale from 1 to 5. And I'm like, you know what? Sometimes I can't decide whether I should give a book a 3, a 4, or a 5. This is a lot.
Well, and also, like.
It's very granular.
You know, what's to stop an agent from sending this to all her clients being like, rate me well.
Yeah.
You know, and then like, what if it, you know, I bet an agent, like an author out there is thinking like, but what if my agent finds out?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, there's so many things wrong with like all of it. But yeah, so maybe there's a way to talk about like, because I know we talk all the time on this podcast about like asking the right questions and like asking the right people, but like, are we telling people to ask the right questions? Like, I don't know. I'm just like inviting a moment of like self-reflection of like.
I think part of it is that you have to.
You meaning me or you meaning an author?
An author.
I was going to say like me. I don't got to do nothing.
I've never presumed to tell you what to do, Chad.
Except when I ask you advice all the time, like Bridget, tell me what to do. Bridget and I have both been in like pitch hell this week where we're like, why does it all sound like
this is all
garbage?
Terrible. I don't like it. How do I fix it?
Although when I asked you if you were there the other night, it was because I had a pitch that I really liked and I wanted to share with you. And I was like, but then it was like too late. And I was like, I should have done this earlier.
Sorry.
Now, why am I really low?
I don't know.
Am I just not close enough?
Maybe we need to turn you up too. Anyway.
Good times. I know that one of your favorite parts of this podcast is listening to us fuck with the audio.
So getting back to my original point, I think that one of the things that you, querying writer who has received an offer from or is preparing for a call with an agent in which you might receive an offer, one of the things you need to do is ask yourself those questions first so that you know what will serve you best. You have to do a lot of self-interrogation so that you know how much editing am I really prepared to do on this? How much do I require from my agent?
Absolutely.
And how much communication do I personally expect from my agent? Some people really do want like daily emails and some agents are not the person who are going
to do
that.
See, that's a survey that I would tell people to take.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be like
the
1 to 5
quiz sort of thing.
Not even that, just sort of like, you know, you have received an offer of representation. Do you A, say yes to it immediately? Like B, or like, you know, you're out on submission. What causes you the most stress? Like A, hearing every response as soon as it comes in with detailed information.
Yeah.
B, like hearing once a week that there isn't any news. Like C, like I feel like that would be useful.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about like the circumstances, like the way you like to hear information, the way you like to get bad news. And making sure you know that about yourself before you have these conversations.
Yeah. Because an agent is 100% going to have bad news for you.
Yes.
Whether it's and like best case scenario, that's just some rejections before you sell the book. There are inevitably going to be moments in your career where you have to make some hard choices. And so you need to know how much or what you expect from your agent at those points. Because otherwise, when we're on the phone with you trying to, you know, seal the deal, partly we're going to be trying to figure out what you want to hear and whether that's something that we can do. So there are a lot of situations where I have multiple options. Like I have some clients who...
Well, is it that we're figuring out what you want to hear, or I feel like it's more like we're trying to be as honest as we can about like this particular project, you know, because it's not like I never want to tell someone what they want to hear.
That's true.
Because what if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
About how it turns out, you know, I'd rather be honest about like the way that I operate.
Yeah.
And have them say no, than like promise them it's going to be like sunshine and rainbows and then be like, so your book didn't sell.
Yes.
I've sent it to like 60 editors. Like,
this is why I never promise anything like that on the phone. I'm I'm not going to guarantee that your book will sell. I'm certainly not going to guarantee an amount of money that I think it'll sell for. I'll tell you, I think this book is... has a very broad appeal and is very commercial, and people will be excited about it. But that doesn't necessarily translate into it's definitely going to sell, because I don't want to build you up in that way and be like, this is absolutely guaranteed to happen, and then have it not work out.
Yeah.
That's just cruel, frankly.
It is.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of like when I'm talking to them about the way that they want to have a relationship with an agent, sometimes you can tell from the way someone asks the question what kind of relationship they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people want a much more hand-holdy kind of relationship than others. And so I'm trying to figure out, what are you looking for in an agent? What do you know that you're looking for in an agent? What are you maybe unconsciously looking for? Is that something I can do? Is that something, how can I best meet your needs?
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a lot of flexibility in the way I do my job. Some people really do want to hear every response as it comes in. Some don't want to hear anything. I can
accommodate
both. And
some people want even more feedback than that, or like even more updates than that. And I always say that I will accommodate that to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I have a busy week.
Yeah.
But I think too that, like, you know, part of the reason that we ask these questions is we're not asking to hear the things that we want to hear. We really want to know the truth.
Yeah.
Because the more we know going in, the better we can sort of serve you in your quest for publication.
Yeah. I have one client who, on the first round on her book, didn't want to hear anything until there was, like, actual news. Like, oh, this editor is taking it to acquisitions. Or it's time for me to start a new round. And then when the second round came around, she was like, actually, I do want to hear everything. Can you tell me all of them? I just want to see if this is more stressful or less stressful or what's going on. So I really appreciated that she was honest with me about that and wanted to try something new and see if it worked better for her.
And I feel like as stressful as it is for me to receive feedback, I'm always happier that I got it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, because otherwise I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Otherwise I'm just sort of like... So what can we tell authors today that is concrete and helpful about finding out what would be a good fit for them? I mean, one of the, you know, we always joke that the, you know, the motto of this podcast is it depends. But I mean, I think that if you take anything from this discussion and this industry is that it truly does depend. It depends on the individual author, on the agent, on the book, on the time of the year, on the fucking seasons of the fucking moon, like the, you know, who knows? There's so many things that go into like making a book that like, you know, 1 to 5, it just isn't going to cut it in figuring out like what's going to be. And like also like someday like someone's going to get fired over that survey if it gets like, if those results are going to get published or something, like someone's going to be like, well, on this survey on the internet, it sounds like your clients hate you.
Yeah.
I told Barry, I was like, if you fire me over an anonymous survey,
I will quit.
I will burn your computer. I will set your computer alight. I didn't tell him that. And I would never do that. But, or would I?
Oh, that's the real threat, is that he doesn't know.
Well, I mean, he has like a perfectly good baseline for whether or not to fire me is the money that I bring.
Yes.
You know, like.
Yeah. Is it working? Is that.
It seems to be working pretty well. Not to like toot my own horn. But, you know, it's, God, it's just such a fraught shit show out there. And the idea that like an anonymous survey could actually like.
Affect your income.
It's really frightening. And,
and
honestly, like, I'm lucky. I'm in a great position. Like, I'm going to be fine. But there are other agents out there who are trying to establish themselves who are in much more precarious positions who could totally get hosed by this. And it kind of makes me mad.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because being an agent is kind of inherently precarious. Everything's
kind
completely
of.
Completely in flux.
Kind of. Remember that time that we're all universally affected by the paper shortage?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
That was 3 months ago.
That's still kind of ongoing.
Oh, Jesus
All
Lord.
The printers are still backed up because of that.
I'm like, I'm really happy that we're all being environmentally conscious, but also I want to kill everyone.
It's not even environmentally conscious. It's that they, there aren't any paper mills making nice paper anymore.
Well,
they're all making cheap, like, paper products because everyone freaked out about plastic.
Yes, exactly. But that's the environment, you know, paper is still biodegradable. So,
yes.
you know, yeah.
Yes.
So, all right, what else can we talk about? Well, let me pose this question that Beth posed, because Beth, who really does the Lord's work in literally every area, and I do not think gets enough praise or, like, acknowledgement for how much she does for the industry. So shout out to Beth Phelan, who is just a wizard. She runs DV Pit. She really does, like, the most for the industry and for everyone else. This is sort of like the brief thread that she posted, and I'd be interested to hear, you know, responses in this, you know, on our Tumblr ask or from Twitter or whatever. She says, spitballing, is there currently a website or blog series that hosts essays written by agented authors about their process of figuring out what they need from an agent? I don't mean how I got my agent posts. I mean things like how I knew I needed an editorial agent. I ask because I'm still thinking about that survey and specifically its goal. I want transparency and I want fewer authors being taken advantage of, but working within a system with zero accountability on the agent's part, plus an imbalance of power, how do we make that happen? So basically, her next question is there a way to help querying authors prepare for this relationship? And I think that that's actually a really good way of thinking about this question, mm-hmm. because there isn't really an analogous relationship.
It's not at all like having a CP.
At all. At all.
Not even a little bit.
It's not like having an accountant. It's not like having a CP. It's not like having even like a business manager. It's its own strange animal.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the answer is, but it would be interesting if we talked about it.
Yeah. And it's sometimes often a lot more emotional than a lot of, and than like any other business relationship that you have.
100%.
Because it's so, let me just.
You don't want lightly carbonated Pinot Grigio? This is another $13 bottle of wine. We still suffer.
Sanissima.
We still suffer greatly in the peanut
the lack
grout.
Of bevy. Or
not, the bevy drought, not the. Peanut.
Not peanut.
taking up real estate in my brain, I guess.
It is a very catchy name, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
We don't like it.
But we still don't have any, and I don't like it. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you. But I interrupted you with wine, so.
It's true. I can't argue too much.
Can you be
that.
Mad about
can't
it?
Can't really yeah. complain. I don't even remember what I was talking about.
I was asking about, like, how do you prepare someone for the relationship?
Oh, yes. And so it's like, it is, I mean, most of my clients are fairly practical people. They all seem level-headed, and they're all very, very smart. And so, but
which
even...
bears no strong resemblance to yourself, I'm sure.
No, of course not. but
Bridget, my most sensible friend.
Yeah, but still, it comes up to things where I get emails from them that are basically asking for permission to work on this other thing that they really want to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something where it's like, you don't actually need my permission. I'm not your boss. You can write whatever you want to write. But I appreciate that they come to me and are like, I know that I'm supposed to be doing this other thing, but this thing is the thing I'm really excited about right now.
Yeah.
Can I do that? And so it's always my greatest joy when I'm like, yes, yes, you can.
Yes, you can. Because sometimes people need permission and stuff. I mean, I would say that, like, I think we've sort of talked before about how it's like a little bit like a marriage.
Yeah.
There are some excellent like marriage counseling like Q&As online, which I have maybe looked at. Not for fan fiction purposes, I assure you, where they kind of take you through sort of like scenarios of like you and your partner are fighting and you like and like one of them isn't like one of like your partner isn't giving you enough information and you feel like how do you deal with that? Like I would say like go through one of those surveys.
That's a very
genuinely
good idea.
Because like, you know, apart from the sort of like sexual component, which we hope doesn't get involved,
nope.
You know. It is very much a partnership and there is like an emotional intimacy. Like I know way more about my clients, like mental states and like emotional states than probably many other people in their lives.
Yeah. Certainly not their accountants.
Oh yeah. Certainly not. you should also have an accountant.
Yes.
Have one.
especially someone who is good at doing taxes for freelancers.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's what you do.
PSA.
Especially now that the tax code has changed and no one really knows what they're doing anymore.
Yeah. Pretty much. I'm like not even worried about my taxes this year. I'm like, I'm going to owe money, but like no one else knows what they're doing either. So
it's fine.
Whatever. yeah. So I think that kind of covers the survey. Do you have closing thoughts on the survey?
Basically just that choosing an agent, whether if you have multiple offers, this becomes a lot more difficult because you're trying to weigh things like the tangible effects of how they are as an agent, like sales and bestsellers and things like that. Along with the connection you felt you had with them and the way that they talked about your manuscript and whether you think that they would be not just a good agent in general, but a good agent for you specifically and whether they actually understand your book. But even if you only have one offer, you should still be thinking about those things because a bad agent or even just the wrong agent can really hold you back, can stall your career in place. And
yeah, it's not just the bad agents, it's the wrong agents.
Yeah. And so you really need to, I know that it's very, very hard to turn down an offer when it's the only one you have. But if you don't feel like that's the right choice for you, you need to have enough confidence in yourself and in your work to be
say
able
no,
to do that.
To walk away. Yeah.
If you got one offer, you can get another.
Mm-hmm. What Bridget said. Hear, hear.
Yay.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So we don't have a ton of questions this time. We have some... Oh, actually, we got one in.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Oh! How timely.
Very timely.
Oh, did we get two? Did we get two? No, we got one.
No.
Darn, I get excited. All right, Cool Shades Anon asks, how open are agents slash their current clients to talking with new slash potential clients that are trying to find the right fit slash avoid schmagents? Is it standard practice for potential clients to speak with an agent's current clients before signing, or might a totally reputable, excellent agent refuse a prospective client that kind of request? I cannot imagine in a situation in which I would refuse.
Yeah. I always feel kind of...
I don't always offer...
Yeah.
But I always assume it's kind of like out there. Maybe I should just make it a practice to offer.
I do feel weird volunteering my clients' time because that's what I'm doing. It's not, I'm asking them to do me a favor.
Well, what I always do, if I want them to talk to specific people, mm-hmm. I always email them and say, do you have time to talk
yes,
to someone?
And they've never turned me down. They're always like, yeah, I'm so excited. I'm happy to help. Please send them my way.
Yeah.
But I always make sure, like, are you available this weekend to talk to this person? And so I'm like, and if they're not, then I could try someone else. But yeah, I feel like if, I mean, I do understand why someone might refuse that request just on principle of it being not their favor to grant. But also I think that that's definitely sketchy and you should reach out to some of their clients on your own.
I feel like no matter what they say, you should reach out to your their clients on your own.
Mm-hmm.
The part where this becomes a little bit fuzzy is, which is something I think we've talked about before. So, for example, if you're looking on our website, our client list is not broken out by agent.
Ah.
And so it's sort of up to the individual author to sort of put their representation like on their website.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it a little bit more...
On their Twitter bio.
Exactly. So that's what makes it a little bit more complicated. but... regardless, you shouldn't feel shy. Don't feel shy about asking for that information or for them to connect you with someone specific. Because almost always our current clients are happy to talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever.
Yeah.
And I always make it clear to my clients. I'm like, I'm not monitoring these conversations whatsoever.
Nope.
You go off. You have
it's
this
like,
conversation.
I will give her your email address and you can have this
if it
conversation.
Is okay with you and
yes.
you can have this conversation and then I can, you know, move on with my life.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
It's not a hardship for us.
Some of my clients have told me about the ways that they talk to potential clients. And one of them was like, yeah, you know, I'm very straightforward about it. I'm like, I love working with you. I think you're a great agent, but also like... if you're looking for someone who's going to hold your hand through every step of the process, that's not you. And that's something that I appreciate about you, but other people might not.
Yeah. And it's better that they know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's better that they know that
yeah.
so that we don't disappoint you like down the road, you know?
Seriously.
So, all right, moving along.
This is exactly why.
I know. All right. So we actually don't really have a lot of other questions that we can answer right now. Oh, yeah. So there's a million. There's actually a bunch of questions in here. Okay. Here we go. Turns out we're real bad at, like, the actual podcast Twitter. So some of these might be a little bit old. So Katie Wright on Twitter asks, actually, let's do this one first. Heather Jackson asks, how do you know whether agents are turning you down because you have a bad query letter or because they don't like your first pages?
That's a good question.
I mean, in the past, the gauge that I've told people to use is, dear author, is your query is terrible. If they use your first name or if they sort of have something like even a little bit more formal, then it's the pages. But that's not even very scientific.
That's also, I use first name for everyone.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
That must take so much time.
That's why we have an assistant.
Well, aren't you a fancy bitch? Okay. Well, fancy people ruining my metric there. Honestly, there's no way to tell. If you're getting just like generic responses, I would say try to improve both.
Yeah.
Because there's no way for you to tell. So
yeah,
just assume it's either.
It's very hard to tell whether, and it might be a problem with the query. It might be a problem with that. Just like the type of book it is, or it might be a problem with like just the first pages didn't jump out quite enough. This is why I try to do, I do have two tiers of responses, and one of them is no thank you, and one of them is I held on to this for a long time so I could think of it, so I could read it again, so there was something that grabbed me about it, but ultimately no thank you. And so I have two like different form responses.
I have dear author and first name. All right, moving along. Katie Wright asks, is New Adult still dead? Any signs that it or a similar category will become a thing? Still dead.
Yeah. Yep.
Still dead. No signs. Sorry.
Did not happen. Alas.
I think it's probably still a thing in like self-published romance, but.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much. So we've got two questions from Jeffrey Woods, both about romance. First, is it still advisable for male authors to use pseudonyms when writing and publishing romance? And also, would a romance novel work if written primarily from the hero's perspective?
I don't read romance novels, so I can't really.
But I think one of the attractions of romance to female readers, which it is predominantly a female, like, I'm making certain assumptions about the kind of romance you're writing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're writing sort of like het romance and you only want to write from the dude's perspective, that's not going to be that interesting to the women readers, because mm-hmm. we're reading it in part so that we can see a woman get like a happy ending, for lack of a better phrase. So I kind of want to tell you to go back to the drawing board and ask yourself like why this genre is like what you really want to read, like what you really want to write. Like, is it what you really like reading? Is it what you really enjoy reading? If you're only interested in writing from the hero's perspective, it's sort of like a different thing.
Yeah. And I can, but the thing is, I don't really know what that would be, because I feel
like. I don't either, but like it's also most of literary fiction. So like.
But I also feel like literary fiction is not the same. Because literary fiction is so often about...
It's like, absolutely not the same. But, like, if you're only interested in writing about relationships from, like, a guy's point of view, I think that there's probably a commercial fiction, like, avenue that's probably good for you. But it's not romance. Because romance is, like, its own animal.
Yeah.
Your phone is, like, blowing
it
up.
It is. I don't know what's going on.
Who's blowing up your phone?
One of those...
Oh, Tracy had a nice reply about... I mean, do we want to keep talking about that other guy's question? I don't want to be glib in responding to him. But, I mean, I feel like, you know, if you've... One of the many reasons that romance writers write under pseudonyms is because, like, in their day jobs, like, they don't want to be, like, easily Googleable as writing smut. It's not necessarily to conceal their gender. I would say, like, think very strongly about, like, why you want to be writing romance.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if that's the genre you love and you've read a ton of and you're prepared to be, like, a good citizen of that world, awesome. Honestly, my knee-jerk reaction is to be like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've literally never read, like, a het romance novel written by a man.
Yeah.
I've read a fair number of LGBT romance written by a man, which is, like, a total another conversation.
Different thing, yeah.
But in that case, use whatever name you want, because it's the Wild West. Who cares?
I can see if you are a man who is something of a romantic and wants to read just emotional stories about men finding love, there's not a lot for you out there.
No, there's not. And even Nicholas Sparks is not for you, yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of a shame. But yeah, also, I'm not sure that I feel like it's still going to be a hurdle for you as a writer to break into that space.
You'd have to be making a space all for yourself.
Yeah.
Sorry to be like Debbie Downer. We're not trying to like, you know.
Yeah.
But
it's all like men cheating on their wives with nubile undergrads. And I'm like, that's not the kind of thing that this I think he wants to read or write.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, hopefully. Hopefully that's not what you want to read or write. I
mean, that's also not a romance.
It's also very tough for us to answer these questions sometimes with, in the absence of other information. Mm-hmm. So, you know, always take it with a grain of salt. But, like, if you're wanting to write into a genre, think about the conventions of that genre. They're conventions for a reason.
Yeah.
And the reason that there is, like, usually a pretty balanced point of view between, like, the hero and the heroine in, like, mainstream romance is because women want to see what the woman thinks.
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily going into that genre to hear what a man thinks about what a woman thinks.
Yeah.
So, cool. Now that we've had that downer moment, I would like to say thank you to Grace and several other people who, my client Kellen, who and Patrice Wilton. A lot of people have been very excited about the podcast in our mentions on Twitter. And we'd like to say thank you very much for being excited about us and for recommending us to your listeners. So I think we have another question from your client, Tracy Townsend, who says, so we tweeted, we're doing an episode on the survey. And Tracy says, oh, Lordy, as someone who gets surveyed regularly re my teaching, I empathize with this. Some students see surveys as the moment of retribution. Can you unpack the reason that that's entirely the wrong attitude to have as writers about agents? I mean, I feel like we covered this pretty strongly earlier, but
yeah.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why this kind of anonymous survey setup does not work.
Yeah.
Is because the retribution instinct is
very strong.
Very strong.
And yeah, it's... You know, we've talked about this before, but for several of my clients, I'm not their first agent.
Yeah.
And they do not necessarily hate their previous agent, but they just weren't the right fit. And maybe it wasn't the right book yet. I'm not sure. And so it's, but there's a reason why that relationship ended.
Yeah.
And so I feel like sometimes it ends acrimoniously, and you're just not on the same page, and you're not necessarily hearing what each other has to say. And sometimes it ends fine, amicably, and it's just like you both kind of agree that you're not on the same page anymore. But yeah, retribution, for one, it's really not helpful for other writers who might be looking for an agent. It's like, oh, this, it's like the 1-star reviews on Goodreads.
I feel like there's a quote from something very famous whose origin I'm forgetting is like, if you're gonna go seek revenge, better dig 2 graves.
Oh yeah,
that's what it's from something very famous that I'm totally,
I think it's
forgetting.
Just like a,
it's from like Star Trek or something, like it's,
oh,
I genuinely think it's from like Game of Thrones or like something like really big and famous and stupid. But if it's an idiom, that's fine. Yeah. I'm fine. That's good. All right. Well, I think that's all the questions we have. So, Bridget, what are you reading right now?
I'm currently reading 2 things. On my phone while I commute, I'm reading Let's Talk About Love by Claire. Oh, God, I need to look this up.
You should have grabbed your phone.
Nope, that's my wrong app. Okay, so on my phone while I commute, I'm reading Let's Talk About Love by Claire Kahn, which is a YA contemporary romance about a Black asexual girl. And it's, so it's like this cute romance. She's trying to work out, she knows that she's asexual. And then she meets this guy and has like unusual feelings for the first time. And so she's trying to,
what is this feeling?
She's trying to work out how that fits with her identity and who she thinks she is. And, also figure out how to deal with this boy who kind of makes her feel a little stupid. But yeah, it's cute. It's, I'm enjoying it. And the other one I'm reading is Tess of the Road by Rachel Hartman, which is set in the same world as Serafina, which was her big,
yes, okay,
very successful book. And it's very well written. She's a terrific writer. And it's doing some interesting things, but it's also gotten to a point where I'm like, oh no, there's a talking animal companion. I could not be more bored by this. So Like, this plot point holds
the things we do for authors we love. The journeys we go on for authors we like.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Too real.
So, what about you?
So I'm still reading the Marlon James. It's gotten real bleak.
Oh, dear.
It's still really good. But I kind of realized...
Did you see the Black Leopard? No, there were pictures of, like, the first Black Leopard seen in Africa in, like, 10 years. Like, an actual Black Leopard.
No, I will look that up later once I'm done with the book. Honestly, like, it's... I mean, it doesn't really have anything to do with the book, but, like, I've been doling it out in such small bits that I've blocked out sort of, like, a lot of stuff because I'm just, like, it's very intense and the voice is very strong.
Mm.
It's great. It's really, really good. But, like, it's going to take me forever to finish because I'm just, like, this is intense. So I'm still reading that. I finished Severance by Ling Ma, which is an FSG book, and it is a literary zombie apocalypse, which I actually would really like you to read because I feel like I want to hear what you think about it.
Okay.
But basically, it's about this woman who is a, she moved from China to America when she was like six, and really, she works for a art book publisher, or like a book publisher where they like mostly do like art books or sort of specialty printing. And she like lives in New York and she loves routine and she kind of enjoys like waking up and doing the same thing and then going home and doing the same thing again. And then this disease starts sweeping the world where it like seizes people's brains where like they just get mired in nostalgia, for lack of a better word. And like they just keep repeating the same actions over and over and over and over.
Okay.
And so it's sort of half flashbacks to her life in New York and half, you know, the present where she's sort of like with this group of survivors, like on their way to like this supposedly safe place. It's really good, but it's also like I have a lot of feelings about it.
Okay.
And then my other thing to sort of break up the Marlon James chapters is because also the Marlon James books weighs like 10 pounds. So it lives on my like nightstand and I read it at night.
Don't bring it anywhere.
No, I can't. It weighs too much.
No.
And I'm weak. I've been, you know, in the sort of spirit of like finishing the series that we began but did not finish. I am currently reading City of Blades, which is the sequel to City of Stairs by Robert Jackson Bennett. It is the second in a trilogy. It's really good.
I couldn't remember if that was the second or the third.
City of Miracles is the third.
Oh, right.
Which is next, because I own that as well and haven't read it. So. I'm that person who, like, buys all the sequels without reading.
I have only read the first, so...
I mean, I reread City of Stairs before I read City of
It does
Blades.
Escalate nicely.
Heyo. Heyo.
That was unintentional.
City of Stairs escalates nicely. Oh my God.
I wish I had done that on purpose.
I also wish to point out that we still have like a quarter of this bottle of wine left, so we cannot even blame being drunk. That was excellent. I'm so proud of you.
Oh my God.
But
I was just mentioning that miracles are more dramatic than blades, which are more dramatic than stairs. That's all.
I really like his world building. Like it's so interesting and very, like, on the surface level, you're like, eh, you know, whatever, they killed a bunch of geds and, like, shit happened, and they're like, oh, there's so much weird shit that, like, you can't even begin to imagine. So, I'm really, really enjoying it. And then, once that's done, I just got, at a signing, Charlie Jane Andrews's new book, City in the Middle of the Night. City of... Stairs, yep. City of Blades.
Lots of cities going on here.
City in the Middle of the Night. I mean, I love a city book. Are you kidding? Like, this is like my jam. So, but I went to her reading last night at the Strand, and she signed it, so it was really exciting to hear that. So
nice.
All right.
I did finish
Melmoth?
All the Birds in the Sky.
Oh, God damn it. I was like, you finished Melmoth?
No. Woo! I have not dared to bring that up again. My radiator is still making creepy noises.
Your radiator is going to keep making creepy noises.
I know, but soon I will be used to them, and they will be... background and not, oh my God, there's someone in my living room. All the Birds in the Sky wound up reminding me a bit of like Francesca Leah Block.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
In a way that I definitely
in a good way.
Yeah. I mean,
because I, now that I'm an old I read Princess Galia Block and I'm like, no.
Oh, when I was young, I was like,
Oh, no. Yeah, no, when I was young, I was like, this is amazing, the most thing. This has spoke so carefully to me, and I was like, you never did any of this shit. Like, no,
when I was young, I was not into it. And so
I wanted to be the kind of person in, like, a Francesca Leah Block novel, and instead Fair. I was, like, a Girl Scout, like, church attendant, like, square, so... Escapism. And now I'm like, oh my god, so irresponsible. Embracing the square that I was.
Isn't that what maturity is all about?
Is it though? I don't know.
I feel like maturity is in fact becoming who you have been all along.
Oh, so I don't think I've said this on the podcast, but I signed up for hockey lessons. We were talking about accountability. Yay. I signed up. It's happening March 13th, exciting. My first class. If wow. I break both my legs, you know what happened.
This is, yep. It was 100% the hockey.
Yeah, basically. All right. Well, I think on that note, thank you again to Caroline and all of our donors for your generous support of the podcast. You can give us, if you'd like to support the podcast yourself, you can support us on Ko-Fi, which we'll provide links in the post on our website. If you would ever like one of your questions answered, or if you'd like to suggest a theme or topic for an episode, you can send that to us at shippingandhandlingpodcast@gmail.com or on our Twitter @shipandhandling or in our anonymous ask box on Tumblr, which is unaccountably still working despite the sexy times purge of Tumblr. But thank you again for all of your support. And until next time, happy Galentine's Day.
Yeah.
Bye.